Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. Have you tried to buy a ticket for a big event recently? Did that question just make you mad? It's understandable. Ticket buying has become a frustrating experience. You can anticipate a long wait in an online queue, a hectic rush to find a spot, and of course, tons of fees tacked on at the end. It'll bump up the price well beyond what was on the sticker. And that's all if everything goes smoothly. Last month, the ticket prices for Bruce Springsteen's upcoming tour raised furor among fans. Ticket prices went up before their very eyes, mid-buying, with some ending up having to shell out thousands for tickets that typically cost $100 or $200. This was part of an initiative known as dynamic pricing, implemented by the ticket-selling giant Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster has become the target of people's frustrations with the process. Here's what HBO's John Oliver had to say about them in a segment back in March.
Ticketmaster is one of the most hated companies on Earth, which is really impressive because remember, this is a planet in which AT&T also exists.
But given that they control ticketing in more than 80% of major venues in the U.S., Ticketmaster can be hard to escape, which means most fans have no choice but to deal with the system, one which rewards tickets for being snagged by resellers who jack up the prices even more. A recently signed New York State law that goes into effect at the end of this month and to reform the ticket buying process, making pricing more transparent and putting limits on resellers. But will this be enough to make event goers dread ticketing any less? Joining me to talk about all things ticketing is Ethan Millman, a staff writer for Rolling Stone covering the music industry. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to hear your ticketing experiences. What was it like? How high did you go for a ticket that you really, really wanted? When did you decide too much was too much? 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or you can hit us up on social media at @AllOfItWNYC. That's Twitter and Instagram. We want to hear about your ticket pricing experiences. How high did you go? When did you say enough is enough? Okay, why did ticket prices become so, I'm just going to write the basic. Why did they become so high? What's going on?
So what we're seeing is a pretty good, I guess, situation for an economics class to go over on supply and demand, really. I mean, that's the core of it. What we're seeing is a lot of people want to go to a show. I mean, in Springsteen's case, look at any of it. There's hundreds of thousands of people who likely want to see him in any market he goes to. There's, what, 30,000 seats in an arena or something like that. Naturally, when there's so much demand but so little supply, the only way that it equalizes is by having a very expensive ticket. And all the other annoyances come from just like decisions from, you know, legislation or companies, artists, and so on. But it comes back to that very core issue.
Supply and demand. Back in the day, you used to go in real life to the box office. Sometimes it was an event. You'd see on the news people camping out all night to get tickets. When did it migrate so much so online?
Well, when Ticketmaster kind of took over, they're, you know, the progenitor of online ticketing, and or at least controlling online ticketing. And so I don't want to blame them for that in that case, just because literally everything has gone to online. And I mean, that this was going to happen regardless, but it happened when, you know, like Ticketmaster became a powerful online ticketer.
And when did they become sort of inescapable as the online presence, and why?
I mean, it really kicked off, like, you know, the 2000s and going forward, and they've gotten only, you know, more powerful ever since like merging with Live Nation in the early 2010s. But, you know, they've been the ticketer, like, I mean, they've been the one in control through this whole era of online ticketing. They've always been the ones in control here.
We should say that Ticketmaster and Springsteen's management put out a statement. Well, they said that the average ticket price was $262 and that, quote, overall 18% of Springsteen's U.S. tour tickets sold for $99 and only 1% of tickets sold for more than $1,000. What in that statement is accurate? What in that statement is truthiness, perhaps?
Well, I mean, it's true to say that, you know, I think it's fair to say that those tickets, those dynamically priced tickets, were not a reflection of every single ticketing price here. I mean, I think that it was noteworthy because Bruce Springsteen has always been a man of the people. And I think that it was a really big shock for fans to see out of nowhere that not on the scalping sites, but on Ticketmaster was there a, you know, a ticket that was going to cost thousands of dollars like that. I think that you find plenty of people who spent more than they'd like to on, you know, maybe not the best seat in the house, maybe a few seats back. But it's not so much that every single ticket was so expensive that everyone was upset about it. It was about just mm-hmm. the dynamic pricing in general. I think that, you know, it's accurate, but obviously with the caveat of like all the stuff we just said.
I'm curious about the phrase dynamic pricing. That seems like that was massaged quite a bit somewhere.
Well, Ticketmaster refers to it as platinum pricing in its own website, but dynamic is kind of the more industry standard term to call it. It's the same way that you would describe it for like, you know, on an air, like for getting a flight, you know, it's that that's mm-hmm. how flights do it. That's how a lot of different industries handle something where it's like fluctuating supply and demand. Someone's going to pay more, you know, to sit right mm-hmm. next to you than maybe you did or the other way around. And it's annoying.
Excellent analogy. Where do resellers fit into this conversation?
So, you know, like an economist would say that charging $250 for a Springsteen ticket is actually grossly underselling for what it should be. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's the case, you know, because it's like it's not nothing, but they come into play because there are a lot of people who would spend more than what the market value or what the artists consider the market value to be. And that'll happen anytime. When we were writing our story, a former ticketing executive who I'd spoken with was talking about, like, that's not just ticketing. You know, look at anything, like, look at, for example, PlayStation 5s. They still have that to this day, where every time it goes on sale for $500, some reseller who had some means of getting it, whether that's because they put a lot of time into it or used bot software to cut the line, essentially, they get it before, you know, a fan may want it. They're an interloper and they see that there's a fan who's going to spend $1,000 instead. So that's where they are in this equation. They're just, you know, seeing that there is a huge amount of demand for a limited supply. They get their hands on the supply and then sell it for a pretty big profit.
Our guest is Rolling Stone staff writer Ethan Millman. We're talking about buying tickets in the current environment. Let's talk to Frank on line one, calling in from New York. Hey, Frank, thanks for calling.
How are you? Fine. First time caller, long time listener.
Excellent. Thank you. Let's hear your story.
Well, my story is actually, and it started happening during the pandemic when shows started opening up here, is that in New York City, you can get tickets to like King's Theater and there's a lot of smaller venues that have, you know, 100 or 200, 300 or 400 people, and you get tickets for $25 or $30. And you go through Ticketmaster, and the ticket price almost doubles because of the fees. Now, if I knew that that money was going to the artists, then I'd have no problem with it. But it's the fact that after you get to the end of the transaction, there it is. Fortunately, what I found out is that a lot of these local venues, as long as their box office is open and it's open on any day they have a show, I can go down there and I can buy the ticket at the price that's actually shown, you know, on the initial part of Ticketmaster and stuff like that. But not everyone can do that, right? You get up work or you don't even live in the area. You're not going to be able to come and see those shows.
Frank, thank you so much for weighing in. I wanted to get to that point that Frank made, the idea that you have sticker shock at the end. I understand there's some legislation to make sure that stops happening.
Yeah. So it was just signed into law by the governor in July, like I think on July 1st. So that means 60 days from then. So start of September, we'll be seeing that there can't be any of those hidden fees at the end. It has to be right up front. You're going to see what you're paying, which is, you know, it's good. I think that's a great step for that. Like, I would hope a lot of states follow up on. I think that it should be the case that anyone should know right when they look at it, like at a ticket, what they're going to pay, especially when, as Frank said, it could be twice as much by the end of it. And if it's a particularly high demand show, you're in this real big, you know, sink or swim, fight or flight response mode where it's like, okay, well, what do I do? I don't want to lose out on this ticket. I just, you know, I was already waiting in line forever. I wasn't sure I was going to get it. And now I have to pay twice as much. I mean, maybe it doesn't change whether someone buys a ticket, but at the very least to not have to worry at the very end to make that decision, I think that's a really good step forward.
Let's talk to Mark, who's calling in on line two. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
I actually have quite the opposite problem. I've been looking forward to seeing My Chemical Romance forever, got tickets, spent a good chunk of change on good seats, and I decided with the girlfriend we're going on vacation. So I'm not going to be able to go see this concert, but Ticketmaster doesn't allow me to sell or transfer these tickets. I don't want to make any money. I just want to get the money I put out for it, but it won't allow me to sell or transfer. I don't know what to do.
Thank you for calling in. Have you heard this before?
So I hadn't been following the My Chemical Romance tour. I wasn't aware that they were going non-transferable tickets. I'll have to actually look into that afterward. But, you know, it's funny to even bring up that just because that's another common, like in our story, we touched on that as well about there's no perfect solution in some of the things in some ways, because you look at non-transferable tickets in some ways, okay, great. It completely cuts out the scalper market because, you know, only a fan can buy it. So there's no sense of reselling it. But in the other sense, what about this? What happens here in the last second, you know, issue that you can't go? I mean, you're now at this part where you can't, you know, do anything about it, and you're out a few $100s, and it's hard. I'd like to see, I mean, I personally want to learn more about why it's so impossible to return a ticket. I mean, I think it's also just like a lot of risk mitigation for a venue and for the ticketers in general. I know of some startups that want to like experiment with returnability of tickets, which would be a huge step forward. Maybe not easy for a gigantic stadium act, but I'd like to see, you know, I'd really love to see cases of what happens if it's actually manageable or if it's really going to hemorrhage things so heavily for a venue. I mean, I know it's not so simple, but I'm sure any consumer wants to know, why can't I just return it? And there's obviously a lot of complex reasons, but that's really the core answer. Why can't I just return a ticket?
Or not, because it is pretty simple. Why can't I just return a ticket? You know there's somebody out there who can figure that out. Let's talk to Chuck, calling in from Manhattan on line five. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling All of It.
No problem. Three quick things. One, I have heard that the pre-sales that Ticketmaster does is actually a way for them to gauge what the demand will be and where they should set their ticket prices going out of the gate. Two, why is it when I've gone to buy tickets for in-demand shows and I'm on there for an hour and all of a sudden it says, sorry, this show is sold out, and it says, then I'm like, okay, I give up, and then I look on a couple hours later, then all of a sudden the tickets I was trying to get before are now $500 or whatever, and they're called their platinum tickets. Shouldn't it be that they just never say that it's sold out and they just keep going until it's sold out instead of saying the show is sold out? Okay, so you give up, but then all of a sudden, boom, they're jacked up on Ticketmaster's website, not resellers, as platinum. And then the last thing is, when you pay the processing fees, why do you pay, if you buy four tickets at once, why do you pay a processing fee for each ticket rather than all four? It's just a computer doing what the computer does, not someone stuffing tickets in an envelope. So those are my three things.
Interesting. Did you find any answers to any of those in your reporting, Ethan?
So I wish I could say I had an answer on the platform. I hadn't heard of many cases of like something being sold out and then not being resale. I'd like to look further on that. It's a good question that I wish I had a direct answer to. As far as some of the other points on, you know, waiting for an hour, I mean, so, like, some of those issues just come down to, as we said, there's like a lot of demand for a show. But like, I think you're to that other point about, if it's platinum, I actually hadn't heard of many cases of this in the past. I'm sure I'd like to talk with this person afterward to hear more about it and see if there's something I can look into.
You can DM us and then we'll get that information to you. But doesn't Ticketmaster have some sort of program where they have a verified fan program? Maybe that's what he's talking about.
Yeah. So verified fan. It's a system. I mean, you know, to especially like for a really in-demand show, we see it a lot. Like Harry Styles used it, Billie Eilish used it. And I think Springsteen actually had it along with dynamic pricing. But the whole point is not just to gauge demand, because if you're a gigantic act, I mean, I'm like, you know, I don't need a bunch of data. I don't need to know how many exact tickets to know that I'm going to be able to sell out Crypto.com Arena here in LA. Like I'm sure any big artist knows very well that they're probably going to be able to do that, unless they're on the cusp wondering, should I do an arena or should I do a stadium or something like that? But, you know, so verified fans, not just to say, do I have, it's not only do I have enough for like a certain date or whatever, because we know a big act could do it. It's just also to try in some sense to mitigate how many bots and scalpers are there, because it's an extra step. It's not perfect. I mean, I've heard enough stories about people saying like, you know, there's a scalper who could have a bunch of really cheap SIM card, you know, activate like a farm essentially of cell phone numbers they want to link to try and, you know, get a better chance of getting these tickets. And I mean, I'll be honest, when I look at Verified Fan, it's not like I see zero resale tickets or even enough that it seems like it's made much of a dent. I mean, maybe it could have, and I'd like to see more on that, but I've always questioned pretty, you know, I've pondered quite a bit, how much does Verified Fan actually stop scalpers from getting tickets?
Talk to Francesca on line six. Francesca, you got about a minute. Tell us what you know.
Hi. Okay. I feel like we have collective Stockholm syndrome about all this ticketing regulation here. I went to see Hamilton in London before the pandemic, very high demand, all of that. They have a very good system there. You can resell the ticket if you need to, but it's all strictly regulated. You can resell it for the price of the face value of the ticket. Plus, you know, there's like a $5 nominal transaction fee or whatever, but nothing serious. So if you couldn't go, you could resell the ticket. You could buy tickets at the last minute, but there was none of this crazy inflated. It just wasn't like that. The venue controlled it. Everything. I don't remember all the details, but I just remember it was tightly controlled and there was just not a way to jack up the prices. So it was completely reasonable. And there's no reason we can't do that here, other than the fact that, I don't know, we're too afraid to demand some real regulation.
That was the way a lot of people are feeling. One last quick question. You can hear my dog is horrified by it as well. Where is the extra money going? Is it going to Ticketmaster artists? Where's this extra cash going?
Depends on what you're looking at. For example, the fees that people bemoan all the time. You know, Ticketmaster told us just the other day in our story that, you know, they get a small percentage of those fees. A lot of it goes to the venue, whatever. Then stuff like dynamic pricing. The whole point of that was they're looking at the resellers getting so much more money than them. This is our way of being able to cut in ourselves. And that money, that huge amount of money from these sales on a like expensive ticket, that goes to the artist, that goes to Ticketmaster. It's just, you know, I guess they see it, it's the same money that a fan is going to spend. We're just getting it instead of StubHub or, you know, the reseller on StubHub.
Ethan Millman is staff writer for Rolling Stone. Ethan, thank you for sharing your reporting with us.
Thanks for having me, Allison.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.